Hey, yo. Go ahead, Keith. You're the host.
Hey, yo. Here we go.
I'm eating.
This is quite a turn. I will be hosting the show, and you've brought the noisy food.
Once I have it open, it won't be noisy. It's just a package.
That is a curious turn of events.
Not carrots. I'm not a rude.
Up is down, black is white, as we are in a hotel in Edmonton, Alberta. The distant far north of Alberta compared to... this is Wolverine country.
Yeah, it really is. This is, I think, in the original X-Men movie, didn't they say it? Somewhere... near Edmonton, Alberta.
I think it's near Edmonton, Alberta.
Yeah,
we're in Wolverine country. We're halfway through just over halfway through, I guess, because there was a Friday night, and this is the end of Saturday of the Edmonton Comic and Entertainment Expo.
Technically, 2/3 of the way through, since it's 3 days, and we finished two of them.
Early thoughts. It is.
By the way, you're Keith.
I am Keith.
And I'm Chris.
He's not just silent, but deadly.
He
is that too.
I'm sorting comics right now as we do the show, which is also different than most of the times we do the show.
No, it's not.
I'd like to... I'm looking at the free Captain Canuck comic that I got.
Which actually was the highlight of my show, because I thought I missed out on the free Captain Canuck when they published it on Canada Day. And I didn't think I'd be able to track that one down. And there I am, just sitting in a panel. And they go, oh, by the way, here's some free swag. That you would have paid for.
The free comics is always a good time. That's always
the That's your highlight of the show. Is the cat, and yours was what again?
My highlight of the show so far... I don't remember what story I was going to tell.
I don't know.
Oh, my highlight of the show is that I was searching for something very autumn that is on my want list. The number 13s of the Heroes Reborn 1990s year-long event. The number 13s will never be reprinted because they were intercompany crossovers with Wildstorm. Finishing off Heroes Reborn, the trades go to number 12. These are the number 13. So I'm looking through the bins, which is unusual for me because I don't buy a lot of single comics. I mostly buy trades. I'm going through the bins, and who is six bins away from me digging through the back issues? Bruce Timm. He's taking a break from his table. He is digging through back issues. That was pretty cool.
I remember, and that is awesome. I love it when I see that. I remember... here in Calgary at the Red and Point Club years ago. It used to be a good show. And they used to bring in some famous people. Just a few. But I'm not sure if it was even still called the Red and White Club show then. But whatever it was at the Red and White Club. And the one year they brought in Kurt Busiek. I hope I'm pronouncing the name correctly.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't see that show.
Yeah, it was the same year they brought in. They had him and they had who was it they had? I think... the big celebrity guest was the guy who played Q on Star Trek. So it wasn't you know.
So they had, like a full-on show.
But it was like a full-on show, and it used to be like that. Now what they do is really try and highlight the local artists, I suppose. But they don't even necessarily do a very good job of that. It's kind of fallen by the wayside as the Calgary Comic and Entertainment Expo has kind of just taken over and become such a monster that... I don't know if they really know what their place is at the Red and White Club show anymore.
It was kind of flea markety this year, I'll be honest.
Yeah. But it used to have some cool people. But I remember Kurt Busiek and thinking, oh, I really want to talk to this guy and meet him. And he had a good lineup and stuff there. But he was just kind of like he didn't look like I expected him to. He looked like somebody who's just like a regular Joe, you know? he had these guys to read their... You read their stuff for a long time, you find them to be almost iconic in your head, and then you meet him, and he's kind of like, you know, not really outgoing, and not really, just kind of like a guy who's like, hi, yeah, thanks for reading my stuff. But when I'm bin diving, and I look over to me, and there's Kurt Busiek with this massive, huge book, like a huge notebook of stuff crossed out and stuff written down and whatever that he's digging through the bins for. I'm like, I love this guy again. Like, he may not be the most gregarious fellow or outgoing, but he was awesome because he loved comics. You could sense it.
I love that, but the only thing I'd love more than having that happen is to have that happen and me being able to grab a book before he does. Just totally scoop it on him. I'd actually cheat and look over his shoulder at his list, jump down the aisle and see if I could find those books, buy them, and then show them to him.
Edmonton is an interesting. We made the trip up from Calgary.
I was just gonna say before you go on to this, Keith, you've said this before. One of your favorite things to do at a convention is when you do see somebody who is in the industry walking around, and they are buying stuff. You're curious to see what they buy, especially if they're bin diving.
I am, and I missed what he bought. He was there for a while, and he bought one comic.
Mm.
And I did not see what it was. And what was hilarious was the guy that was ringing him up, I had no idea, even though that he was, like, Bruce Timm was wearing exhibitor pass.
Yeah.
Or a guest pass, I guess, the artist pass. The guy ringing him up didn't notice that. And then a girl walks over, and she's like, you know who that was? Like, blah, 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 blah. And then the guy... And then, like, I continue shopping, and I go up to pay, and the guy by this time is over with his coworker, and he said, "You'll never guess who I just served. Bruce Timm's."
I guess we could have asked him what he bought.
I was laughing too hard for the Bruce Timm's thing.
Bruce Timm's, yeah. He was very excited to meet that Bruce Timm's.
Well, he didn't want to make a big deal, clearly.
No, clearly.
You know. Bruce Timm's is there shopping. You don't want to let the dude shop. You want to talk to him about comics? You can go to his table, talk about comics.
Mm-hmm.
But
really,
let him be a fan. have you done much shopping, Mo? Have you gotten anything?
Yeah, what are you talking about? But you know what? The thing is, I come to these things and I am I'm certainly. Like, I'm not somebody who, like, sits there and has the list of stuff to finish off the collection or whatever. Because, really, the books that I want, I've generally gotten years ago. And they're in two long boxes, and that's pretty much what I've kept. Right? And then I add a few trade paperbacks or whatever. But as far as single issues, I don't really, you know, collect those. And Lord knows right now I don't have a space for it since I'm sleeping on somebody's couch for the next year and a half or 2 to 3 years or however long until my house is finished. So... Yeah, I mean, I'm not somebody who's going to have, like, a collection like that. But, I mean, there's certain things I'm looking for that I just knew, even coming here, I wasn't going to be able to find. You know, the interlocking covers for the Valiant Armor Hunters crossover. Because you don't come to a convention like this and really expect a lot of new stuff. But, yeah, I mean, so what do? I talk to the people who have been good to us on the show, are good to me on Twitter, who I can build some sort of connection with, and who I appreciate their time, and I support those people. So it's, you know, buying the things like the Kill Shakespeare, and those guys have been on the show, and they're just really good guys, and buying the things from Renegade Arts, you know, that and their books, and that's really, so I'm buying stuff, but I'm supporting the people directly who I'm connected to from the show, and who are, you know, are good to us, and yeah. And at the same time, I'm also getting good books.
Wish I could say that. I really did. I bought a huge ass collection of the Dazzler today. I didn't pay a lot for it, but it's still like over 1,000 pages of Dazzler.
That's a giant amount of Dazzler you bought. I will say that. I bought something as speculator value, which I basically never do, but it was $1. the Justice League Annual, which is Justice League International Annual, which is a big tie of what's happening in DC in the spring. I did buy Kickers Incorporated number 5.
Ooh.
So taking that off my list, those are keeping track of Keith's rebuilding of the New Universe collection.
Probably everybody.
Kickers Incorporated number 5 coming off that list.
And you know those heroes were born someday. Somebody's going to realize how rare those are and what a find that is, and there's no chance of them ever being reprinted or whatever. Like, they're completely worthless right now.
Someday. I thought someone may have already figured out, because the first thing I look for is the Avengers, and for some reason, it's in the bin at $10.
Ooh.
And then I'm like, oh, that's way more than I'm going to pay for this thing. And then I'm like, okay, well, Fantastic Four, $3. Yeah. Iron Man, $3. And Captain America, $3.
Yeah.
Why the Avengers one was so much, no idea.
Maybe it was the entire series collected, and you just didn't realize it was a bundle.
But yeah, even $3 is a little off for them, but it should be more. But
I would have tried to reason with them. I find if you're talking to somebody who doesn't know exactly something like that, who doesn't know exactly, I'd actually show them, see these three issues. They're part of the same series. $3, $3, $3. $10, there doesn't seem to be reason, and they'll assume somebody on their end made a mistake. And
that's actually true. That probably would work. So what Chris is suggesting is, if you can scam the poor comic book retailers who are barely eking out a living out of some hard-earned cash, you do it.
Because then I get to be the one that's ruining Comic-Con.
Yeah, that's right. Right now, who's ruining? I mean, the highlight of your show was finding these Heroes Reborns, and yours was Dazzler, or what was it again?
That was my shopping highlight.
Free comic book from the comic
guy. And mine is that girl in the incredibly accurate Witchblade outfit.
Yes.
It was accurate, yeah.
I think I saw her at Calgary as well, but
I don't know.
No, you didn't.
Because there's no way if that girl would have been in Calgary, I wouldn't have seen her. There's no way. Just unbelievable, because we were talking about how Adrian Curry was wearing a Witchblade and got kicked out for Comic-Con.
She was Aeon Flux.
Aeon Flux,
she was dressed as, and got kicked out of San Diego Comic-Con, yeah.
And this girl was showing a lot more skin than that outfit, because I remember seeing that outfit. And it is unbelievable. You never thought that somebody could so accurately recreate so little. and the Witchblade costume, if you're you know, familiar with the book at all, it was like, thank you, but really? But thank you.
It was something strange.
It was surprising.
Yeah.
I did have a... I saw a very... I've got to get a very cute photo that will go up the story I write for Comicosity. Probably will likely be up before this episode's up. It was two kids who had been given free Captain Canuck comics,
mm-hmm.
Dressed as Calvin and Hobbes. It was awesome.
Super cute. It was a super cute picture.
Yeah, super adorable.
Yeah.
And thanks to their mom for letting me take their picture. But yeah, the little kids in costume reading comic books. That's good stuff right there.
That is good stuff. We need to see more of that. You ever tried watching that? It's on Netflix. The Searching for Mr. Watterson.
Yes, yes. I enjoyed it greatly.
Bored me to tears. I wanted to like it. It was awful. It's like 20 minutes in. I'm like, this is so self-serving. And there's no Mr. Watterson. It's all...
No, I actually like how they didn't actually search for the man. They didn't search for him. They just interviewed people that were inspired by Calvin Hobbes for 2 hours.
Yeah.
I find that exciting.
No, it was too self-serving about the director's, what he was looking for, and I was bored and I couldn't make it all the way through. It moved so slowly and just wasn't interesting enough. There's no hook for me. I don't know. I had higher expectations.
It was good enough to keep me up to like 4 a.m. once. I started it with, I'll just see what this is, not knowing what it was, and it's like, oh.
Because I mean, Calvin and Hobbes is like the most brilliant thing. And yeah. The first 10 minutes is really good. And then all of a sudden, then it just becomes this, then nobody's saying anything new. And nothing's happening.
Well, I learned a lot. I had no, like, I knew Calvin and Hobbes didn't have any official merchandise, but I did not know that he never sold his original art.
I did not.
He donated it all to a library in his hometown.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Where it's archived and you can go in to see it and it's preserved there, but I mean, that's how a lot of cartoonists make the extra bucks, is selling the original art.
Considering how much money that was into the merchandising, but to tell you the truth, I think that just selling the strip itself plus the, I mean, I don't know what he's done. He's just disappeared, right? I mean, he doesn't have, who knows if he does any work or if he made enough money, just the volumes. I mean, I don't know how many sales there would have been of the collected editions of the strips, but
quite a few enough, I'm sure that he's very comfortable.
I'm on Twitter, and I have found an image of the young lady in the Witchblade outfit, so that can go up in the show notes. For reference only.
And for reference only, and it should immediately be sent to me.
Also for Mo's reference.
For reference only. For reference only.
I did have a moment of that woman may actually be destroying Comic-Con.
If when people start bumping into each other and not looking where they're going, falling out of each other, there's injuries and mayhem everywhere. She may be destroying Comic-Con.
That happened to me today, actually. I was caught by surprise by cleavage belly button area without... I wasn't prepped. I wasn't on guard. I just... Oh, and I did bump into somebody, like, absolutely immediately.
Yeah, that'll happen. You do have to be... You have to be... It's like looking at the sun. It's just a quick look. You know. So how about we were talking to Connor McCreary of Kill Shakespeare, and what was the name of the young lady again beside him?
Oh, I don't remember.
Artist. Oh, and I absolutely should know.
She was an artist, but her style was a manga, which I don't terribly gravitate to.
Yeah, and I'm going to look it up. And meanwhile, because this is a good story. So I will look it up. But meanwhile, you guys...
I did a little more shopping. I got... Yeah. Chris found me the Dr. Zaius pop figure, and I found Ape Soldier. So I now have all the Planet of the Apes pop figures.
And I was really glad to find the pop figure I came specifically here for, which is the Lost in Space robot pop figure, to stand beside my Robbie the Robot pop figure. Sort of go together.
That's pretty cool.
Yes, Mo, they are different robots.
Oh, okay.
Did you know that the Lost in Space robot was in a Twilight Zone episode?
Yes.
I just watched that. I've been watching Twilight Zone. I'm over the next about a year, I intend to watch every Twilight Zone from all three series. I've seen almost none of the 2002. I've only seen probably half of the 1980s. And I've never seen the final two seasons of the original. So there's a lot I've never seen, but I'm watching the original starting at the end and moving backward because they're ones I haven't seen before. So, and I just watched the one that has Robbie the Robot in it.
Not Robbie.
The other, what's the name of it?
It's just known as the Lost in Space Robot. It never really had a name. Oh. I think it was TX-71... Oh. But Lost in Space, there were a lot of holes in that the writing of that series.
How about the holes in the writing of that movie?
Yeah.
See, and that's...
I mean, you can't fault the movie. It's based off a property that... I mean, the Lost in Space guys were attacked for carrots in the third season. I'm serious. That was the story. Carrots grew really large legs and killed people. Or tried to kill people because they... I mean, yeah. It was a poorly written show by the end. So, really, you can't fault any movie. I actually like the movie. Matt LeBlanc aside.
He's probably the best part of it.
No, Heather Graham is the best part of that movie.
Hey, Stephen Hopkins directed. I quite like his work.
I don't know his work.
Judgment Night would be a good one. Predator 2.
Oh, really?
Which I think is a highly, highly underrated film. A lot of people hate that film, but I have a soft spot. I find it way more watchable than the first Predator.
I also went to a great panel, I've forgotten the gentleman's name. It was an instructor from Grant McEwen University, who's a literature professor, but also studies film, studies other forms of pop culture, and is a specialist in intertextual study, which is when you take something like a movie and then also look at the video game based on the movie, books based on the movie, anything else that exists that you can... you can look at deeper than just the finished film. And it was a panel called Sucker Punch the Musical, in which he argues that Sucker Punch is can only truly be understood if you understand that it was, at least it's on some level, at some point, a musical. And that it was likely going to be more of a musical than it is, but it fits the form of a musical, which I've actually said since the day the movie came out, that if you looked for any kind of linear understanding of the film, it wasn't going to make any sense, in the same way that Chicago doesn't make sense if you want to understand why the lawyer is singing the closing arguments in a court case. It doesn't follow the real world logic in any form. What it does do is stop dialogue and have music and song that in which the words have meaning in the scenes that are going on, which is what a musical does. And three or four of the songs are sung by the lead actors, which is his big argument is that it's not coincidence that Emily Browning is singing a song about she's singing Sweet Dreams when a dream scene is about to happen. It was kind of neat, though. It was backing up what I've always said, which is Sucker Punch is far smarter than you think it is.
Well, and the thing is, as much as you are making yourself... As much as you're talking about how great you are...
Yeah. What's important is that I was right all along.
I hate to give you any sort of credit, but I have to admit that this is exactly what I've heard you say numerous times over the last few years. So when I saw this in the program, I thought, what the hell?
Why am I not on this panel?
Well, number one, I was like, yeah, you should be hosting this thing. And number two, I thought, Keith was right about something? And he was.
Statistically, eventually.
So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of...
I gave up the typing until I get Shakespeare thing.
was this panel... Was it held in a real convention room, or did they just rent you and the professor from Grant McEwen?
It was well attended.
Really?
there were more people at that panel than there was at the Captain Canuck panel, which was a very well attended panel.
Yeah, we were at the same time you were at that. We went to the Artists of Image panel that they had on Nat Jones and Chip Zdarsky and Lord knows, I hope I say his name at least somewhat close to correct.
He said it's similar to Starsky.
Yeah, so that's kind of what I figured. And Vic Malhotra, what's his new book again called?
Which I don't know how to pronounce. Roche Limit or Roche Limit or Roche Limit.
I think it's Roche Limit. I think that's how they pronounced it. Nat Jones, of course, did 68 and did Spawn, and Chip, famous, of course, were for infamous, perhaps you would say
infamous
for sex criminals,
and Zdarsky Con, which was a competing convention to Fan Expo this year.
Ah, perfect. But anyways, they were there, and that was, and it wasn't very well attended, and I think it might have been the Sucker Punch. But actually, to tell you the truth, I think it's good that. I can't remember the actor's name from Big Bang Theory. Something Helberg. What's his name? Remember the first name? Whatever. Simon Helberg, I think it is.
Mitch
Helberg. That's Hector.
One of the.
You're thinking Mitch Hedberg.
Yeah, Mitch. I think it's Simon.
But either way, this actor had a panel going on where people would have had to start lining up the same time as this one. And I think that certainly hurt attendance because this was a big. This was the biggest. He was the biggest star probably on the weekend, right? Like on a top show like that. And he's well known for his, you know, like late night talk show appearances, and he's a voice impressionist and all this stuff. So he's, you know, very popular. So, anyways, the point being though that this panel was unfortunately not well attended because it was great. Not only was it incredibly entertaining, but we managed to get a lot of information about a lot of behind the scenes information about Image that I found really interesting about how Image has put in their own. Limitations so that to make sure that they don't strive to produce books in any way just to make a profit, that they strive to produce books for literally for the industry and for the quality of the books and for and for the artists and writers, and to be a resource for them. And that was kind of cool. And that's things about Image I wasn't really aware of. So,
well, I wasn't at that panel, so you can tell me as if you're telling me.
Well, I couldn't repeat it all because it was a lot of information, and I'm not very, very bright. But
well, you told me a thing about how you started talking about how they make a flat fee
for the publication. It was $2,000, and they said if you sell 1,000 copies, you sell 100,000 copies, you get $2,000. It's a $2,000 flat fee going to Image, and they say so. I mean, if you're Walking Dead, this is great. They said it is a bit difficult. They said the good thing is there's a flat fee and they're not there. That's the type of thing that keeps them from having to attempt to produce. Like, if you have a great selling book, to all of a sudden do the crossovers and all of a sudden to produce a second one, like, you know, you have 47 books of X-Men because it sells. Well, you don't have 47 books of Walking Dead, even though if they came out with another Walking Dead, it would sell. But that's Image is not chasing the dollar because they're not going to make more money for the publication of it, just based on the sale.
Yeah, we have two Walking Dead books, and Robert Kirkman's writing about four more. I mean, that sort of blows a hole in the theory.
But that's his... No, it doesn't. Because that's his money, and that's his income, and that's his decision. That isn't the publisher forcing him to do it. So it doesn't blow that theory away.
We're not to Walking Dead books.
No, not that I know of.
Aren't they doing a spinoff?
They're doing a spinoff of the TV show.
Okay, I got confused there. Yeah, okay.
But that's different. And regardless, that's different. If you had a book that was as successful as Walking Dead, by issue 12, you would have had a second book. You know? Or whatever. And that's the point, is that they are... That's the type of thing where they said, this is the good thing. They said, we don't have a large... We have one guy marketing all our books. You know, they don't have a large... You know, they don't have a big staff, and they don't have a big budget for these type of things because they're not really making the money off the books that you would think they are. On the other, and they said that's a good thing, that they're really putting it in the face of the creators. The bad thing is you really are putting it in the face of the creators, and if they're not good at being able to market the books, they're not good at being able to get the name out there, that unfortunately a really good book can fall by the wayside and not be read and be canceled really quickly. And even Chip Zdarsky said, you know, Matt Fraction came to him and he said, we really get along well. We work together on this little, what was that, a movie project or a video game project?
It was a music video project. Yeah, it was a music video for a radio show they were both fans of.
And they did this project, and they said, we should just do a book together. And Matt Fraction came to him and said, hey, let's just do this book. It'll get canceled after 3 issues, but that way at least we can say we work together because we like each other's company. And then, of course, it's a very popular book. The Sex Criminal is very successful. It was so successful that the Chip's really not having to do his day job where he worked as a... cartoonist and for newspaper.
Illustrator
for newspaper, which he said was a real soul-sucking job. And he finally able to get away from that. So, really...
But it shoots a hole through the complaint last year at the Image Expo that when they announced that line, all the new titles, and it was all known creators.
Yeah.
It really shoots a hole in that. Oh, they're just chasing after money. That's why Scott Snyder's doing a book, and Lemire's doing a book, and if a Scott Snyder book gets them $2,000, and Peter Panzerberg gets them $2,000, then
exactly, yeah.
Clearly, that's not at all.
That's
how
not at all what it's about. No, it's, and that's the thing. And they said that's in place because very quickly, when in the 90s, when they started out, they quickly became exactly what Marvel and DC were and became what they hated, you know, and they immediately started licensing out their characters and licensing out these things, but they were making so much money, nobody cared. And of course, they tell the story. Chip tells the story. And I'm just saying Chip because Zdarsky isn't easy to say. I don't know the guy personally. I just talked to him for a couple minutes, and I think I insulted him 2 or 3 times, but that's just me.
He'll get to know you better, and he'll start insulting you back.
Oh, he already did.
And this Dr. Zaius figure looks awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's freaking cool.
The more I look at it, there's some real detail in the jacket and everything.
But he tells the story from the documentary.
You take him out of the box, right?
Oh, yeah, I do.
I wouldn't know if I should do it, Alex, because I'm rattled quite a bit.
No, I'm not encouraging you to do it now. Yeah,
absolutely do. I keep the boxes in case I want to get rid of the figure later, but I do take them out of the boxes.
Anyways, the Image Revolution documentary. Is that what it was called? I think it was called the
Image Revolution.
Yeah, he talks a story about how there's a guy who's dressed as Bad Rock, how Liefeld makes the Bad Rock suit, and it's just like, you know, even this guy's making a bunch of money just going around as Bad Rock making appearances, and he's driving Liefeld's Corvette, and he gets drunk and crashes it, and he says to Liefeld, "Oh, I'm real sorry about this," and Liefeld just goes, "That's all right, I'll just buy a new one," because they had so much money.
Well, and there's a story in Image Revolution. I think it's the Homage Studios, because Lee had put so many people on. No, Homage was Silvestri's.
No, that was always Top Cow, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, Top Cow. So who was Homage?
Get them all mixed up. Well, yeah, it wasn't Larson. It wasn't
Did he become Wildstorm later?
Maybe anyway, it was
Jim Lee's group anyway. That they had a ton of people on salary.
Yeah,
And people were making a fortune, like page rates for books. And there was a point where, like, he looked out the window, and every car in the parking lot was a sports car.
Yeah,
and just like backing the money truck up to these guys, and they were slow because they were getting paid so much money per page.
Yeah,
there was no motivation to go fast.
No,
no one's pushing you to hit your schedule, and you're being paid as. More per page than you would make for a whole book at most other companies.
And this is the type of thing that we kind of got the information about, how Image has created a system now where that won't happen anymore. And it's a good thing for the industry and for the creators themselves, and that they do things for the creators themselves. There's some more details, and like I say, I can't recall them well enough to tell them to you, unfortunately. Attend the panel next time, folks. I mean, Jesus. But...
And I learned
now, show some damn interest.
If Nat Jones was never in comic books, he's not suited for any other job.
Well, that's true.
Could not make a living in another.
He was 17 years old when he walked into a place and went, "This comic book thing looks like it could be cool to do." Not even being a movie guy, not even being comics, and having a job like 2 weeks later. Like, you know.
Chip's face, who basically took 20 years to break in.
Yeah, yeah, and he was just are you kidding? Yeah, but it was very interesting. A lot of stuff they talked about, how a lot of the schooling that you go to, and how a lot of it isn't so useful, and the things they could do to improve that, and a lot of stuff, like I said, about Image itself, and really, they gave a lot of credit to Walking Dead, saying Image, the revolution where Image is now the place to go for these creators, is because Walking Dead was successful, and it created the new revolution for Image as a creator that people would trust again, both for the readers and the creators themselves. So, yeah, it was a great panel. And this is the type of thing, these panels, talking to the people, making the contacts, and trying to set up a longer form interviews that we can do for them, for the listeners, that they'll enjoy, rather than trying to get, you know, a 7-10 minute floor interview. You'll be able to find that anywhere. Any fool can do that.
We know a fool is doing a lot of them.
Yes. Yes.
Well, I did. I had fun at the panels. We did the Captain Canuck panel as well. I was able to look at art from the from Captain Canuck number 1, which comes out in spring 2015. I was only able to look at it off the record, hopefully they will share some artwork with us when it's time. It looks gorgeous,
they said that during the panel. They're like, "Oh, this looks great. We can't wait to show it to you guys." But when they're saying it, they're talking about their own projects, they're like, "Oh, of course they're going to say that. Of course they're going to think that." So when I hear it from you, though, I'm not saying I trust it. But yeah,
it's really amazing artwork. It would limit it to say that it's as good as what you'd see at Marvel or DC. It's like
better than that.
It is. Yeah. I mean, he's really. bringing everything to this book. It's he's got there's two page art across panels across two page layouts. Mm-hmm. It's not splash heavy. It's action heavy.
Yeah,
good storytelling. Even like because I was looking at about 12 pages.
Now there's available for people is of course they can check out the web comic animated series.
The webisodes are out. If you're in Canada, you can get the summer special.
Yeah.
Kalman didn't do artwork on that, but
regardless, everybody should check out those webisodes. I really enjoy
webisodes. They're on YouTube. They're on if you search
really Patrick good little yeah. very entertaining. I'm just wondering, art style, is it at all reminiscent of what we see in this in the?
No, it isn't.
No.
No, it's a much more it's a much more superhero comic look.
Yeah,
yeah. Okay. It doesn't look like George Freeman's stuff. It doesn't look like the webisodes.
Now, Richard Cumley, the original creator of Captain Canuck, there was one great thing we learned about this, and that he's sort of involved in the project, giving his okay on the project, and sort of off to the side a little bit. And I mean, this next year will be the 40th anniversary of this character. And the great quote was him saying to the guys, and they're saying, you know, he's a little bit out of touch in the current marketplace. And then him saying to the guys, you know, what we need to do, guys, is get this into the grocery stores and the convenience shops, and it won't really make a go of it. And they're just like, you don't do that anymore. And he's like, really? What do you do now then? Well, that's why we have comic shops, right? And he just kind of, you know, forgot that. So that's, yeah. I thought that was pretty damn humorous. He's still thinking.
I actually like the announcement they made. They were in the early stages of a second animated movie.
A full animated movie really is the thing.
With all the voice credits, all the voice actors.
Which means to me that they're going to do it right. They're going to take the same format they did with the webisodes, which we all generally like, and actually make a long form movie out of it. I like this small independent animation. So this is the best news they could have got. They could have told me that a month from now we're going to get a huge budget animated movie, and I wouldn't be as excited as we're doing this again, the same thing, but in a movie form. But that's just me. Well, no, because I don't. I mean, as much as I love Captain Canuck, I do not want to see Pixar's version of him.
No, that's all I want to see. I found a guy. I spent a lot of time at Artist Alley so far this show. Met some interesting folks. Hopefully, some folks will have on the show. Possibly some that we'll have on the Creator Summit. I found a guy doing custom minifigs, Lego minifigures. So I've got one of the ones that I've always desired, which is a Two-Face. I should get Nick to do me a Two-Face commission. He would do a really cool new.
Oh, he'd do an awesome one.
I should get that done, and a Captain America movie version with shield. Comes with the Captain America shield, and then a surprise one for Matt. We can't say what that one is because I have to mail it to him. And I've told him that I'm mailing him stuff.
We're buying actually quite a few gifts for people here for other people this time around.
Mail it to him in pieces.
Here's the ear. Give me his amount of money, he'll get the rest.
Getting gifts is nice. Getting presents for others, it's good stuff.
That's true.
I haven't done a commission or anything. I'm not doing any photos this show.
I might get a photo with Alice Cooper tomorrow. I haven't decided yet. Maybe we'll go in together on it. I'll do it, something like that. Still one chance, I think, in the mid-afternoon. No, it doesn't have nearly as many, there's not nearly as many
cool people as there is at a Calgary convention. It's not nearly as busy either. You know, and it's put on by the same people, so the correlation to make is direct. But I'm really enjoying the panels, and I really enjoy the convention center itself. There's a really nice, really, really nice setup there, superior to the one in Calgary. So, I mean, yeah, and I had the Witchblade girl. So it's really not, and my girl, Lilia Korosov, is Poison Ivy, which was also something else. So, yeah, I mean, we're not going to, I mean, I'm enjoying the experience, but there's things they could do to grow, but, I mean, you can even look at something like Calgary, where they have 97,000 people and it's the fourth biggest, and you can still think of, oh, there's a lot you could do to improve. There's things they could do here. I would love to see a push for more creators and artists that are, you know, kind of a couple more big names would be nice.
It's pretty lacking in creative. I mean, I think there's fewer creators here than there was in Regina.
I think you might be right. Maybe that's because we're a week away from New York.
Could be. I did talk to several people in Calgary who weren't doing this show because New York is next.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's because
New York is so soon. They couldn't do this one and that show.
Yeah. Which is strange though, because this one, theoretically at least, you mean. It's not as good as Calgary. And I know this from talking to some of the guys saying, how much are you doing compared to Calgary? And most of them are telling me they're doing about a third of Calgary. But they're also telling me that no place is as good as Calgary.
Yeah.
Right? So you can't really compare that. You'd still think that if you're Turner Profit, if you come and bring the right product, and you're a writer or you're an artist and you're doing commissions, you'd make enough to be able to attend to both and do them well.
The big thing, though, is if you're here doing commissions, you're not doing the pages. For your comic.
That's true.
Like it, I mean, that's, we talked to a lot of creators.
Well, Peyton Malhotra, God bless him, but at least three quarters of the panel, he was not paying attention at all to what was saying and was working on his book. And they even said he's working on his book right now. And eventually the guys teased him about it so much that he put it away. But he was working on his book because he's behind. And he's even said, I've cut off all commissions for the weekend because I need to finish my book.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, and it's.
But he'll be on our panel tomorrow. He'll have time for that.
I think.
We Talk Comics Live. Well,
let's,
coming to you.
Let's
and it's in Alberta, Canada.
I remind me right before the show that the one I want, that I will tell him that he can work on the pages for Roche Limit if he draws us in.
Ooh, I like that.
We won't harass him if he puts all of us in. And
that was another thing that was actually really interesting. The Image of Artists one, they said the curse of being an artist, and they said that the blessing is Google Images, is Google search, and no longer having to worry about buying reference books and having reference books. And they said they all have them, but they don't look at them. Like they have huge collections of them, but it used to be that this reference material, when somebody would die, they would be auctioned off to other creators and stuff, and the
clip file and
and they said that Google, they said that's the blessing. They said the curse is that they can't watch a television show or a movie or read a comic book or even walk down the street without thinking, I need to be saving this in my head somehow. I need to be looking at this and learning from this. I need to be, how would I do this different? I need to be filing away how that person's standing. I need to be filing away how this street looks and so it's accurate. And everything in their life is work now. Like, there's not a moment where they aren't working. And that's the curse. And so I thought that's kind of interesting. And also they did talk a little bit how it's really a writer's industry right now, but how actually collaborative it is, and that they don't think that they get enough credit, which when you listen to them makes a lot of sense. So yeah, really
I agree. I mean I agree in the same way that I agree at that, you know, cinematographers don't get enough credit.
Yeah.
You know, it is unfortunately the nature of the industry right now is to think of the writer as the director of of the comic.
Yeah, but as far as their points, I mean, we were taught it was artists talking to us. I don't put a lot of credit I don't want to validate what they're saying because I don't collect any artist-driven books.
But that's not the same thing. That's not collecting means that you're not. But what they're saying is not that. What they're saying is the people don't realize how much they're contributing. That's different.
Oh no, it's they're. I think they're contributing huge.
Stop clicking that. Thank you.
I don't think the driving force for a comic book, it's not usually the healthiest thing to have the art drive a book over the writer.
But that's not what they're saying.
And I mean, to actually listen to Nat Jones, who I love his work, tell a story about how he wrote, he was able to get a comic book out of a 15-minute call with a writer. I think that minimizes I didn't read that comic book, but I'm willing to bet it's not the best comic book.
That's the old Marvel method, though. I mean, that's the Stan Lee method that is, you know, now called the Marvel method. Was literally you would walk in the artist would walk into Stan's office, and he would tell them the story, and then they would go off and draw it.
Yeah,
that's a very artist driven.
Yeah, it was an artist driven time. But what he's saying isn't he's not saying it's a great book. That's not what he said. He's saying people don't credit him as being a co-writer on that book because they have a 15-minute conversation back and forth. He comes away with it. He draws it all. The other guy gets the words and puts it in there. But he said, "I'm not writing the words, but I'll be damned if I didn't write it because I had the conversation and then I drew it, and that is writing it." In a way, and that's his point. It's not, and it's not about the quality of the book. It's about the people don't see them as being a huge part. And the same thing Vic Malhotra talked about, how he's working on X-Files and he has a writer who he really really respects, and he's given a script, and it's like, okay, this is the script. I'm not going to be able to interpret this. I'm not going to do my own thing to it. He's like, now I'm working on my own book. We're co-owning it. I get the script, and it's written in a way that allows me to do a lot of and put a lot of myself into it, and that. But again, people won't realize that; they'll think it's just the script. So that's the point that they're trying to make: is that just that they're very much involved. It depends a bit on the product and the company and the whatever, but that they're not really getting that. People don't understand that part of it, and I think they had a good point. So I like that point of view.
Well, it is interesting that, like, John Byrne and Jerry Ordway, who are both artists first, when they write a book, they are not the first name on the credits.
Mm-hmm.
Byrne insists that if he's writing and not drawing a book, his name comes after the artist.
And you know what? Interestingly, they talked about, Chip Zdarsky talks about how on Sex Criminals, it says by Matt Fraction and Chip Zdarsky. It doesn't list who's doing what.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So, maybe that is the way it should be. I don't know. We want to wrap it up for the night. Maybe we'll have might have more to talk about tomorrow after the Sunday. We might not. But either way, I think this has been long enough and pretty good stuff.
And once we figure out how to get out of Edmonton, we could record one in the car on the way there.
Yeah, at least you and I can, and or maybe we'll figure something out.
And we'll have the live episode, of course.
The live episode, and maybe we'll get Chris a few more thoughts from him tomorrow. And yeah. What the hell?
All right.
Comics that we talk podcast, email that, but you never do. But if you ever want to.
Does.
Well, we don't check it either.
Well, maybe lots of people are in. It's Schrodinger's inbox right now. It is both all of the emails and none of the and zero emails.
Let's check my own. I forget to check that one.
It has 1,000 emails and zero emails at the same time until you look.
Yeah. At We Talk Podcast on Twitter. Anything else? Are we OET?
We Talk Comics on Facebook.
That's right.
We Talk Comics on Facebook.
We Talk Comics and We Talk Podcast, kind of Facebooky thing that Chris has been kind enough to set up, which is good. And I appreciate that, even though every single thing you say tonight, I go, well, that was wrong. But, you know, that's because I'm a dick. So,
well, we've been at a comic show all day, and, you know, we're ready to argue.
We're ready to argue. Well, after the cosplayers ruined the damn thing for us.
It was a ruined show. clearly. Yeah.
So I say we turn this thing off. It's now, what time are we looking at here? We got 10:45 p.m. So I think we should probably spend a couple hours reading some comics, guys. What do you say?
Sounds awesome.
Hey, and here we go. This is the last panel of the Edmonton Comic and Entertainment Expo. Thanks for coming out. Thanks. We are recording this for our audio podcast, We Talk Comics, which you can find on iTunes and at wetalkpodcast.com. And because it's an audio podcast, I will just have to describe the heartwarming group of hundreds of fans who have joined us for this panel. Coming out. Folks that came out because the word comics was on the schedule. That's what I like to see. I am Keith. I'm the host of We Talk Comics. And we are joined by some special guests here today. We are joined by Hope Nicholson.
Do you want me to talk?
Yeah, I want you to talk and say why you're here.
Oh, I don't know. Someone just sent me an email and said, do you want to be on a podcast? And then I said, okay, sure. And I'm a small press comics publisher. I specialize in 1940s Canadian comic book reprints. My latest project was Nelvana and the Northern Lights, which I did with Rachel Ritchie. And my current project is Brock Windsor, a 1944 action-adventure hero based out of Vancouver.
All right, and our next guest is, I did not check the pronunciation of your last name, Vic. Vic the Hot One Malhotra. Was that close?
Yeah, no, that was right. Hello. This is actually my hometown show. I'm from Edmonton, and fairly new to working professionally. I've only been doing it for 2 years, and fun factoid, I actually got my break-in gig coming to this show, the Edmonton Expo, 2 years ago.
Wow, so it's... are you obligated to be at every show now? Or is...
No.
Already signed up for next year. And Rick Overwater?
Yes.
Rick Overwater, who is from a small press comic called Futility. Tell them a bit about Futility.
Well, first of all, I'm a longtime journalist. I've written in the Edmonton Market a lot for the Calgary Gazette, for the Edmonton Sun, and C and View, and all that kind of stuff. In the last couple of years, I've finally made enough as a writer during my day job that I can do what I want to write when I go home, which is comics and fiction. So with two partners, I have a table here, a book called Futility. It's kind of a tribute to Weird Science and Tales from the Crypt, with a little bit of Mad Magazine. For those of you that know your history, they got shut down by Congress, the EC Comics Group, and then they went on and found Mad Magazine. A little bit of heavy metal in there. And we're just three guys blindly putting out our own book and trying to make our way doing it. So we are kind of hitting the industry sideways a little bit, and that's the gist of it right there.
And I'll actually introduce myself. I'm Chris, regular co-host of We Talk Comics, and I gotta say, Rick, your book is filthy.
it's for mature readers. I'll say
oh,
that.
No, in that case, it's not filthy enough. I thought it was a children's book.
No, it's not for kids. It's for grown-ups. We make, I guess, one thing with the Weird Science thing. If you read Weird Science now, it doesn't seem that weird. You read two panels and you go, the bride is going to turn out to be a robot. The humans are going to turn out to be the food. You know what's going to happen. So we need to set that weird up for the 21st century. And, you got to bring your game, basically. So.
Other than Chris is actually just reading comics for all the panels going on.
That's work, man.
That's the work ethic that we've come to expect from Chris.
Hey, we need to put the beer away for today. It's not normally the case.
So we are at the end of another convention. You folks have been doing you've done a lot. I hope you've done a convention in almost every province now. Who are conventions for? There's been a lot of talk this week about creators doing conventions, whether things are up or things are down for them.
Conventions are for the fans. That's there, pure and simple. Like, I mean, it's great for us to come here and sell our stuff and gain audience members. But at any point, if we're not doing good sales and we can't afford to go anymore, then that's like our own decision. At no point, I don't think, is any creator obligated to say anything along the lines of, you know, cosplayers are a new addition and shouldn't be welcome there because they're distracting from the sales, or celebrity autographs are taking away, because it's not really about that. If you want that, concentrate on building your online business, concentrate on going to book fairs where there is no celebrity or pop culture presence. But I was very annoyed a lot this week, as I usually am on social media about so many topics, but with the people I respected just saying the most stupidest things in the world about why they aren't making as much money. And yeah, that's not really... It's nice to have a con, let's be honest. If we can pay our own way, that's absolutely fantastic. But in the end, it's about the fans and getting the experience that they want out of a convention.
I would add to that, I guess. The number one rule in writing is write for your reader. And if you're pairing your writing with art, then you put that for the reader, and the reader experience comes first. And if you just extrapolate that further down the road, a forum for stuff that you're making for readers is like this convention. It's got to be for the fans. I think if you put on a good convention, you strike a balance between serving all that stuff and making sure that creators can get their voice in there. Because at the end of the day, you need fresh creators to want to come to these things. But the idea that there are two sides, you know, and it can be polarized, makes little sense to me. You know, as long as the conventions are for the people that come to want to ingest all that art and celebrate it and show their inspiration however they want to do it.
Anything you want to add, Herbic?
I don't know. I do agree. For me, I don't think I go to cons expecting to make money and sell tons of stuff. I go to meet other creators, network, and meet fans, and just enjoy myself. So I don't know. I guess I'm pretty simple in that respect.
Well, and the three of you are coming from three very different perspectives too. Hope as a publisher, Vic as an artist, and Rick as a writer. Rick, you have the finished piece you can sell. Mm-hmm. Vic is actually doing artwork right now while we're talking. So he's been doing commissions all weekend, and that's for the artist who can do commissions at a show. That's certainly a revenue stream different than what Hope and Rick have.
So can I add to that though?
Yeah, go ahead.
When you're doing these things, and when I got out of college with my new degree and all that stuff like that, I did not get a job in my field. I ended up being a traveling salesman for a long time for an oil spill company. It's god awful, but I did it. But you gotta look long term. Just because you're not selling any comics today or selling whatever you are at a convention doesn't mean you're not making any money by being at that convention. Because you're out there, you're exposing yourself. And I've had plenty of opportunities. Before I was a writer, I was a nationally distributed recording artist. I used to be in a band called Agriculture Club for about 15 years on a label in Winnipeg. And if you keep showing up in a town and taking a loss in that town, one day you can hit critical mass. And I've had stuff where I didn't get paid at the show, sold two CDs, we went up, played, we did get an article. Somebody, the one guy in the audience, turns out to be somebody with some clout, saw the press, and all of a sudden you're on it, you're getting paid $2,000 to open for DOA, some legendary punk band or something like that. You know, you walk away disappointed, we lost money on gas and all that stuff. No. When you average it out over 6 months later, that show actually made us $2,000. So you gotta look long term, and just because you're not selling any comics or anything like that today doesn't mean that you aren't actually adding to your bottom line in the long run. You just gotta love making what you make long enough and never quit doing it. And the way to do that is to be cursed to kind of have to do it or be miserable, I think, but that's another conversation altogether.
Absolutely. Like every time you go to a convention, there's people who come by, and a lot of it is people who, you know, have seen you on the internet or anything like that, they just want to talk about things, and that's fantastic. But a lot of it is new people that are, like, surprised. They think they've never heard about this, they've never seen your work before, and they're amazed. And building one fan who will buy, you know, every book of yours for the next how many years is something that's absolutely amazing. So, as you say, like, yeah, you might take a loss on travel and everything like that, but when you build your fan base, you're investing in your future in the best way possible.
Chris, do you want to add something?
Yeah, well, not about the conventions specifically, but I was wondering, Hope, you've actually spent the last, say, 2 years engulfed in the history of Canadian comic books. And I was just kind of curious.
Oh, it's a lot longer than 2 years. That's for sure.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm actually wondering if you've come across a property or something that we need to know about that's been lost or we'll never see again. Is there that rare find that we can keep an eye out to look for?
I mean, like, all of it's incredibly rare and never been reprinted. For those people who don't know, in the 1940s, Canada had a golden age of comic books, which was when American comic books were banned from entering the country, just like any luxury good was. Pulp novels, comic books, champagne, chocolate, all of that nonsense was just banned because they wanted to save their money for buying important things from the States, like steel and weapons and that for the war. So we create our own comic books. And none of those have been reprinted since the 1940s. And together with Rachel, I was the first person to reprint Nell Bannon and Northern Lights, one of the first Canadian comic books. And currently I'm working to reprint Brock Windsor, which is a Vancouver-based superhero. And that Kickstarter campaign has actually been active for the last month and a half and ends tomorrow, actually, which is really exciting. And then in a few weeks, I'll actually get the money, which is fantastic, and I won't have to stop borrowing money for rent. Being a small press publisher is exhausting in that regard. You get, like, money once a year in just a giant chunk and then just expect to make it last forever. And unless you sell things in between, of course. But, yeah, there's amazing characters. There's Major Jomo and Assistant Jojo, which is an armless war veteran who actually has a dwarf that is perched on his back that uses his arms for him. That was a 1940s Canadian comic book. And Puck is actually, from Alpha Flight, is based on the character. And yeah, there's Captain Newfoundland from the 70s, who's this incredibly ridiculous, like, kind of quasi-spiritual superhero that takes, his orders from some sort of mystical Atlantic god. And it's so bizarre and so beautiful. Like, it is actually the best art I've seen in that time period. And it's weird. It's ridiculous. So yeah, there's amazing things in Canadian history that have been completely lost, and hopefully they'll be found out after time.
Well, and Rick, here's a publisher that you can lose your book really quickly, mm-hmm. And then she can unearth it in like 6-8 months, and then it's Kickstarter time.
Well, something to keep in mind.
Back burner. How many here are comic fans, are comic buyers? What, about half? Better than half? Okay. How did you... We're looking for how people got into comics. And why are these guys not in comics right now? Why are these guys not buying comics?
I don't blame them. They're expensive. They waste all your money. It's hard to follow plot lines. There's no reason people should be into comics. It's an awful, awful addiction. It's like cigarettes or anything else. It's terrible. Don't buy comics, kids.
Do you want to do a mic drop after that? You can just...
I told you. I don't know how to make jokes or understand any sense of humor. But yeah, that's my serious but also funny declaration.
There is a challenge. We'll go to questions in a few minutes, but Hope legendarily has no sense of humor. So if you have a question or you have a joke that might make Hope laugh, you can also do that. I can tell by the look on her face, she really has no sense of humor. Rick, you were in Artist's Alley. You're in... which is both the most glorious and the most flea markety of areas of a con.
It's a little flea markety. The fleas are my contribution. but yeah, what was the question? So,
yeah. I thought you were just going to go for there. I wouldn't need a question. Yeah. How do you get people to pick up the book? How do you get people to stop? They've never heard of what Futility is. It doesn't have Batman in it.
The number one
thing. Batman?
I know.
I bought this thing, man.
Putting Batman in it is a great thing. If nothing else, the lawyers from DC will read it. But I guess you just got to put all your time. And I'm the writer. The writer's usually the kind of the type A personality of the team. So if you come over and watch our table, there's one guy doing most of the talking, and then the artist sitting there sketching, you know. But hey, that's what makes them awesome. I take it around and show it around. Do media, like anyone that talks about comics, you should talk to. And we've been kind of waiting. We have issue two out because we just knew issue two would be stronger than number one and answer some questions. But also think about your angles. Calgary Sun, they don't care about some little comic. However, Expo's coming. They have to cover. Spoiler, I was the entertainment writer for the Sun team for a while. They have to cover Expo. So fast forward. They don't really care about your indie comic too much. That's the sister to C magazine for the Edmontonians in there. You know? But you hit them and say, we're going to be at Expo. If you're thinking of doing some Expo coverage, and they have to because it's going to be the biggest entertainment event, you know, that week. And you want to hit the local angle, we're here to talk to you. We've got art for you. Always have a high-res picture for them and that kind of stuff. So I started with that, you know. Then you get to the con. You've got some press. Probably bought a couple people to your table. Not that many for the thousands of people who read it, but it also shows people that you want to invest in your art that you're able to get out and do the work. And then I start hawking. Like, I just say hi to people and call them, and you start talking about your comic and what's good and try to hone your pitch. And so it doesn't sound rehearsed, but try to nail in a few sentences why your comic is good and why it's awesome. If you think it's for some people, not for some other people, get that in there so they can make their decision quickly. You know, we do the deal like wild, weird science fiction. A lot of people are looking me in the eye and saying no. And we're like, in marketing, you're never supposed to ask a question in your ad that people can say no to. But that's a good one, because if they're not, then they're not going to like your comic. And, you know, they can move on. And then don't be afraid to do the ask. So I get them in. Do you like weird science fiction? All right, well, here, take a look at this. Here's the original art. Here's what it looks like when it's lettered and colored. You give them a minute and then make the ask. So we'd love to sell you one, or would you like to buy one? And at that point, they'll already know the answer is yes or no or not, and they'll either move on and free up for another customer, or more often than not, they'll reach for the wallet, because you're only asking them for $4 or maybe $7 or $8 if you have two comics. So I've been doing that. I've been the carnival barker all weekend, pretty much.
Wait a minute. Just to summarize it. So it's good, and it doesn't have Batman?
And it doesn't have Batman.
I just have a little comment.
I'll go one step further. It might be good because it doesn't have Batman in it. But have I crossed the line? So.
I think I like Batman. You can describe anything by putting Batman, because you could be like, it's a weird, it's like a Batman, but for weird sci-fi.
Yeah.
And you'll be like, oh, okay, I understand that.
I've been doing a variation of that. Like, if you like, you know, costume guys with underwear on the outside of their pants, this is not that kind of comic. I've used that a few times. And they either go, you know, I'm over to see Vic. Or they go, oh, actually, that's my kind of thing. We're kind of going for the indie comic crowd, the people that buy Fantagraphics. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Fantagraphics, great publisher, or Drawn Quarterly, great Canadian publisher. We're kind of going for that crowd a little bit. The people that want the stuff off the beaten path, that's kind of weird, and Marvel would never in their right mind ever put out. So sometimes you don't want to drive away the audience, but sometimes being clear that you're not for everybody helps speed up the sales process for us. So,
Would you're not cool enough for this? Is that? Can you do that? That anti-marketing.
That's the thought balloon sometimes, right? But no, you don't say that because I'm married. I got a very understanding wife whose credit card my comic is on, and to some degree, you might not like it, but your money is still good, you know. You don't go out of your way to tell someone they're not going to like it. Let them figure that out on their own, you know, because sometimes you could be wrong. They might really like it. And the risk of being a capitalist is they'll buy it, sell it to them, you know, you sell it, you know. Like, there's times, well, I think maybe I'll get this for my nephew. He likes this and this. Oh, he's going to hate that. Yeah, you know, you have to do some of that. So what would Microsoft or Exxon do? So, okay, I rescind that. That's not my business model.
How do you do that pitch, Hope?
I make people believe that it's for the good of history to buy the book.
So. Heart strength.
See, she has credibility and quality and character and stuff that she can bank her pitch on.
It's true.
I don't have that stuff.
Well, it's like Nelvana being the first female superhero in comic book history. I usually start the pitch off with, hey guys, have you heard about Nelvana? And then people always feel awful and they're like, No, should I have heard? And then I'm like, well, no, because a lot of people haven't, but I'll let you in on the inside scoop and tell you the history. And then after that, usually a lot of times they're interested enough to pick it up. If they're not, they've heard the speech, and maybe one day someone will be like, oh yeah, I love Wonder Woman. And they'll be like, did you know there was a Canadian superhero before Wonder Woman? And then maybe I'll eventually get a sale that way. But yeah, I guess I go for the soft sell. I fill them in on what the book is. I get them to chat a bit and let them look through the artwork. And yeah, often they buy, but I try never to use the words like, hey, do you want to give me money for this? Because yeah, I'm banking on the cultural importance and historical preservation of the comic book.
Yeah, see, that's completely opposite of what I'm doing. Well, no, but you know, there's different ways to go about the same thing, and your product has a different character to it. Like it's a piece of history. That's a piece of Canadian.
Well, you
history.
Have to know what your product is. That's the thing. Yeah. If I was selling merchandise, if I was selling a new comic book, my approach would be completely different. Like I wouldn't be probably spending 10 minutes and hoping that people give me money just to have me shut up, which I think some people do sometimes. It's great. But yeah.
You also have to do it what's right for your character, right? You know, like how you feel comfortable so that you're coming off as honest and comfortable when you're talking about it, right? You know, I think that's a lot to do with it. You've got to be yourself because I was just a panel a little while ago with Renegade Publishing and all that, and quite often they'll buy your comic because you've been a nice person talking to them, you know, and that is as much of a reason for them to buy a comic, you know, as anything. So you've got to not be disingenuous. You've got to be an honest person and, you know, be yourself when you're doing it.
Yeah, one of the worst things you can do is be like the salesman and put on your sales voice and try to be uber professional because it comes across as so fake. And prior to doing comic books professionally, I did marketing in school and worked at 630 Ched. I was a sales rep, and that was one of the big things they kind of beat out of me pretty early on. Like, Vic, when you call, you don't try to sound like a salesman. Like, that's for TV shows. Just call and be sincere and be interested in your client and try to find out what they're looking for. So I use that approach when people stop by my table and they're interested in my art, whether that's they're trying to improve their own art or they're looking at one of my comic books or a comic book that I've drawn. I just try to tell them what the story is and be pretty open and just bounce conversation back and forth. Yeah.
Well, and if you have a pitch, like it's a tiger who's also a lawyer. Yeah. That's a good start.
That's an easy one.
Yeah, when I say pitch, it's not like a pattern sales spiel that's designed to manipulate somebody to buy your book. It's trying to encapsulate what's awesome about your book in a short few sentences, you know, so they don't have to stand there all day and listen to you, you know, so they can get a quick snapshot and decide if it's right for them or not. So when I talk about pitch, it's not, look, you know, trying to mentally strong-arm buy a book. It's just trying to encapsulate what's great about it in a very easy to understand and easy to say way. So.
I also like how the pitch is constantly changing, and the more you do it, the better you get at it, the quicker you can kind of give the gist of your story to your audience. I just had a book that came out on Wednesday. It's a sci-fi crime noir story, and it's really, the storyline is pretty complicated to describe, and I was signing at Happy Harbor, and somebody had come up to me, and they're like, well, tell me about the book. And I just kind of fumbled around for 2 or 3 minutes, and I was just like, forget it. That was the worst thing I ever did. Just let me try again. So, you know, doing that on Wednesday when the book came out and not being prepared for it, but coming here to the convention and having the same question asked me repeatedly, I was able to refine my pitch and just basically narrow it down to, well, it's sci-fi, it's crime noir, we took our inspiration from Blade Runner. And that gives a general idea on what the comic's about. And if someone's interested, then I can expand on it. But that's pretty much the gist of it.
What's the name of that book again, Vic?
Roche Limit.
Roche Limit. All right. We're going to take questions. We got some time for questions. But what's the coolest cosplay you saw this weekend? Hope?
Oh, I'm loving the two women that were dressed as Ms. Marvel and Captain Marvel, and the fact that they just went around all together. Those are some of my two favorite character redesigns in recent comic history. Oh, and there was also Spider-Man as Gwen Stacy's Spider Man or Spider-Woman, I suppose, which was really cool because that design just came out a little bit ago. So I was like, yes, he must have really jumped on that. She's like, as soon as I saw the redesigned concept images, I was off and working on it. I'm like, and it looked fantastic. Yeah.
I didn't look at too many people dressed up this weekend for some reason. I saw someone dressed in an Iron Fist costume. I thought that was pretty badass.
I'll always be a sucker for a Wonder Woman costume, but there's a group of people around doing the 80s X-Men, you know, the yellow spandex. They had the whole team.
Or was it X-Men First Class?
Was it?
I saw it.
Yeah. This is where you put me on the rabbit hole of nerddom and knowing what issue is what. I'm out of here, you know. But you know what I'm talking about, those guys? So that was pretty amazing. But I also saw, I'm a music junkie, first and foremost, some guy doing the Alice Cooper thing, but it was more of a Kiss outfit, and the guy looked like Paul Williams, but he was in his giant platform boots today, you know, with the Alice Cooper makeup, and that was my favorite because it was like this genre mashup. And the Paul Williams, it's an accident of genetics, I guess, but you know, Alice Cooper, Paul Williams, Kiss with a little bit of Game of Thrones. Great costume.
I like when there's like four or five levels in the costume. Yeah, it's Slave Leia, Princess Leia, but she's also a zombie, and it's gender swapped.
I don't know what I am, but I want to make a cool costume.
Yeah. Chris, what was your favorite?
I have to actually say, just as we were coming into this auditorium, I saw a Saw doll, a tricycle doll being carted around. And I can't imagine just dragging that thing around the entire weekend.
I thought that was a child, and I waved to it and chatted to it when I first came to the convention this morning.
Yeah, I saw that. That was an actual person on that tricycle, wasn't it?
No, it was a robot.
Really? Okay. Not. Yeah.
It was computerized.
I saw from a distance, but...
I was hoping there'd be a kid in it.
Yeah.
But anyway, a lot of work went into that thing, and I was sort of flabbergasted.
Yesterday, I saw two kids that were maybe 4 or 5 years old dressed as Calvin and Hobbes.
Oh, yeah. Their father came by my booth, actually. Today, they were Fiona and Finn from Adventure Time.
Oh, wow. I would not have recognized that. My buddy Mo, co-host Mo, is in the front row here, and he invented a game for cons.
Hey, that was me, man.
He and Chris invented a game for cons that you can take away with you. It is called Cosplay or Not Cosplay, and the point of the game is to guess whether the outfit is a costume that you don't recognize or the clothes that they will wear again next weekend.
Not cosplay or poor cosplay or lazy cosplay.
There's no cosplay shaming.
Dudes who look like George R. R. Martin are the hardest ones. Yeah.
So the guys that buy the hoodie with the face and zip it up and wear that around, that's lazy cosplay then?
That may be lazy cosplay or just not cosplay at all.
Regular clothes. So
slippery slope into a gray area, my friend.
Sometimes you get bored at a convention, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of waiting lines.
Hope is right now judging you for judging
for
people.
Line, depending on what's on the table
that's
you're
pretty
on.
Much what I do best.
Is there anyone that has any questions?
I got one.
Yeah.
They didn't want to see the awesome Hellboy that Vic did while we were up here.
Yes.
Clap, 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 clap.
What's that for, Vic?
It was great to watch that just kind of unfold in front of me.
It's for the Comic Legends Legal Defense Fund. Take these, and I give them to somebody. I'm not quite sure who I end up giving it to, but it goes up for charity, and I believe the money raised will go to Comic Book Legends of the Past.
I think part of it goes to as well to defend people who get into legal trouble, who are working in the comic book field, who maybe it's kind of pit against them, like guys whose books get seized at the border for erotica and pornography that are, you know, legitimate art books and stuff like that.
Yeah, so it does, I think it goes online and then they take it around to cons and sell it at hopefully a ridiculous price.
All for a good cause.
Wait, exactly. No, that's the CBLDS. Unless they change their name. I'm assuming they just changed their name, because why else would they use...
Comic Legends was the Canadian... It's the Canadian version of the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. There was a store in Calgary that was shut down for... it was fined for selling mature readers' books to underage buyers. And so Comic Legends was the name of that store. Okay. Store's long gone, but the name lives on. You sure there's no questions? It's the end of the con. What question have you saved up?
Oh, can I have a question?
Hope has a question, and then we've got someone in the audience with a question.
To these guys on the panel, what is the most uncomfortable experience you had with a fan this weekend?
I was drawing, and this guy came up to my table, and he kind of stumbled. I'm pretty sure he was drunk, and... I had a ginger ale, like a can of ginger ale, and he like pointed at it, like really close to it, and I was like, oh, I hope he doesn't like drop something from his finger in it, like something gross. But he's like, oh, you can put your vodka in there. I was like, I guess I could. And then he leans over, still stumbling, and he points at my art. I have all these portfolios on my table, and he's like, so you ever get any chicks doing this sort of thing? And I was like, well, I don't know. I've only been a professional for a short time, and I've been married, so I couldn't answer your question. He walked away.
And he did not buy a copy of Roche Lament.
I didn't pitch it.
You have to have fans before you can have a strange fan experience. But I've had lots of parents sitting there with their kids, flipping through the book, and then suddenly whisk their kids away. So... So that's the same recurring fan experience, if you can call that, so far.
Now, Hope, I've been watching your Twitter this weekend. You had one or two odd experiences this weekend?
There's, like, when you're a woman and you're at a comic convention, you're going to get, like, a decent amount of weird experiences, and that's kind of par for the course, so, yeah. Some people are awful. That's just what it is. Yeah.
Nobody here about it.
They're awful outside of the cons,
too. I don't think so. I don't have my glasses on.
All right, right here for Hard Rock Cafe Guy.
I can bring the mic. I'm loud.
We'll start with Hard Rock Cafe Guy.
I'm sorry.
Okay, so if Marvel were to approach all of you and say, stop what you're doing and join us, what would you do?
Call me when you sober up. And if it's still on, yeah, sure, it's time.
I want to be known as, like, editor.
I want to say this is not the only thing I'm capable of doing. This is what I know right now. Sorry, hope I didn't cut you.
What? Oh, no. I just talk without understanding if other people are talking or not. I would love to edit Alpha Flight, because I don't have any skills. I can't write or draw, but I would love to put together, like, a brand new creative team for a new version of Alpha Flight that's really, really good.
That would actually be awesome. Somebody steeped in the history of Canadian comics,
yeah,
doing a Canadian character.
I think it'd rock to have someone to have a Canadian working on Alpha Flight. I think we're about 30 years since that's last happened.
No. There's been Canadians. I'm trying to remember right now who it was. Dale Eaglesham was working on the art for the last iteration of Alpha Flight. He's Canadian.
Oh, fantastic. Hey, I learned something today.
I would consider it, I think. I guess it depends. We just started our image book, so I guess we'll see how it goes, but yeah, I would probably work for Marvel.
He's the one guy here that might actually in real life could happen, by the way. You know.
He's the one person at this table that may be held to this this
question. Marvel might actually call in real life, so...
Go ahead.
So I've heard rumors that they're building a Wolverine statue in Alberta because apparently he's from Alberta. You guys thoughts, opinions on that?
John Byrne doesn't consider himself Canadian. I don't see why we would consider Wolverine Canadian just because his origin in the comic books are from Alberta. That's my personal take on it, though. Yeah,
I find it kind of weird that a city would want to, like, build a statue of, like, a corporate entity as like a representation of their city. I still find it kind of weird that like the Edmonton Oilers, I'm a huge Oilers fan, represent the city so much in certain ways as well.
So is it the city of Edmonton that's kicking this idea around? I've only caught wind of it.
It's more of a grassroots. It's grassroots.
But I think the mayor...
Someone on the city council, I think, has kind of given it a nod. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what's at the core of this, either way you go, probably. This gets back to the whole Lucas thing and odd stuff, too. At what point does art begin to belong to the fans a little bit? Because to some degree, if people love stuff enough to want to make a statue of it, and they don't attach all the stuff you attach to it, if it doesn't mean that to them, at what point do you interject that? So I guess my whole thing is, if you want to build a statue and it means this to you, and there's enough people that say it means this to us, I probably, for one thing, I pay taxes in Calgary, so have at her.
There is the RoboCop statue in Detroit, I think, is probably the model that they're looking at.
The public defacing might be kind of interesting.
Yeah.
But Captain Canuck is from Calgary, though, isn't he?
Winnipeg.
Winnipeg. Okay, so let's get Winnipeg grassroots started.
Calgary and Winnipeg. It was created in Calgary, but wasn't published till Cumley was actually in Winnipeg.
Who was the character from? That's what I was asking.
I learned so much here today. I would have dropped out of school way earlier if I didn't know I was going to sit on this panel. So.
This technically qualifies as a history credit.
Right on.
You had a question?
No, you should ask a question.
I shouldn't write. You were asking about the oddest experience that you had over the weekend. I was just wondering what your best experience was.
Oh, I know. Obviously. The children came up and they were looking through the Brock Windsor book and the Nelvana book, and this was several different experiences. And like, I know I was weird as a kid, and I used to read like 1800s poetry books and stuff, like the shitty ones, like not the good ones, so it doesn't really matter. But anyways, I knew I was into weird things like that, but I thought I was just the odd one out. But seeing like these kids, like 8 years old, come up and be like, "Oh, Nelvana, I wrote an essay about her at school." I was like, "Oh my god, really? Like, you're the only one at this convention that knows about her." Or this kid was just transfixed, and he was reading the pages of Brock Windsor that I had printed off just for my own research before I came to the convention. And he was just like, "Oh, how's Brock Windsor going to get out of this one? The monster has him." And I'm like, "Just take the book. Just, you can have it. Like, I can print more on my printer at home, but just take it, and that's fine." So yeah, kids being excited about stuff and getting really into it in a way that adults just never ever can is like so amazing, and it's worth going to any convention for that.
I think adults can get like that, but just not in public. But for me, it's like, it's pretty simple. I love when people come up and they just tell me that they love the book, they enjoyed the story, enjoyed the work. I Google myself quite a bit, just to find reviews for work I've done, and it's not a good thing to do.
You can just set up an alert for
skin
that.
Then.
Yeah, I guess so. And I don't think I care what reviews say, just because a lot of them aren't very good, but one thing I love is getting feedback from people who've actually read the book, people who are comic fans, and regular day readers, not jaded critics.
Mine's two-tiered. I got a day job, and I do kind of for a living what I do for the comic, but to actually get out of my day job and be surrounded by people like these and meet people who are, A, as passionate about what I'm passionate about, that's number one, to surround myself with people who are into what I am, because during my day, I'm not in this world. Like, oh, this is your main gig, right, Hope, for the most part? Or are you...
So far.
Okay, so you get to eat and breathe it every day. I get these chances. So to surround myself with artists and the community of people that I feel like-minded with is number one. I'm sitting on a panel with Hope and Vic and all that kind of stuff. So to be around those people, that's the best thing for me. And the learning experience that comes with it, because one of the best things you can ever do, whether you're an athlete or a musician or an artist or writer, is surround yourself with people that are like on their A game. And it's daunting and it's intimidating as hell. I'm intimidated right now, but it brings out the best in you, and then generally they're pretty forgiving around you if they see that you've got something and you're really going for it. So that's been the highlight. And then also having people walk by my booth, he's saying all these things about my comic, but the odd dude walks by. More dudes than girls, I'll admit. But
there's no odder dude than Chris.
You know, flipping, and they're like, this is for me. Like, there's probably able to flip through and go, wow, this is exactly what I like. That was the other highlight. So, you know, that's happened like three times a day for the last 2 days, but that's awesome. So,
Chris, did you have a moment?
It's now, Chris.
This panel?
Yeah.
This is your highlight. No. This weekend I've actually reconnected with something that I thought was actually over. Bin diving. When I first started collecting comics, that was what we did as comic collectors, is swimming through bins of comic books. And quite frankly, since I've started collecting digitally, that's not something I've actually done, and I haven't had access to comic book bins in a while. And this weekend, I actually got a chance to reconnect with that, and I really quite enjoyed it. It's like, oh, yeah, this is the feeling I get searching out that one little issue or whatever. But I had a chance to do that, and I had some great fun this weekend.
And this panel.
I haven't absorbed the magnitude of the We Talk Comics live experience yet. I'm sure tomorrow, if you were to ask me, this is the highlight, but it's not over yet. It's an ongoing experience.
It could go downhill.
You may have a hangover.
I always come to conventions to try to find certain issues, like stuff that's not collected digitally, artists that I love, but I don't own that particular piece, and I never make a list, so when I have time to get onto the convention floor and go look at old comics, I'm like, what am I looking for, right? And today I actually found something that I've been looking for a few years. It's like this old issue of Marvel Fanfare, and it has David Mazzucchelli, who drew Batman Year One and Daredevil Born Again, and he has a little story. It's about like this grandma who's lost all faith and how she regains it. It's such a great story. I found it today, so I was pretty happy with that.
Oh, that's awesome. I was doing a bit of bin diving. So aside from the kids dressed as Calvin and Hobbes, because the kids dressed as Calvin and Hobbes were actually reading Captain Canuck comics when I saw them, so that certainly will be the image that stays with me. But I picked a couple of books that I'm going to dig out of back issue bins just because I have missed that flipping through and finding that little treasure. And while I'm going through looking for comics, I look over and a half dozen long boxes away is Bruce Timm also going through the long boxes for whatever's on his want list. And I love to see creators that haven't lost that connection.
Mm. Bruce Timm's cool.
He is pretty cool.
I was like, he was pretty close to me. He was like a booth and a half away, I guess. Two booths. And he was sitting there. He's like, it looks very sophisticated. I was just trying to think about what was going on in his head all day.
All right, we probably have time for one question.
Sure.
One question. The last question of the convention. Right here.
Do we want to record this for posterity?
We are.
We are, of course. I thought we could take a picture. Put it up.
What's one comic book character that you identify with the most?
Oh, did we just jump into this?
Yeah, just go in.
Dazzler. I love Dazzler. And not the new Dazzler, not the last, but the original run that I found, maybe because it was one of the first full comic book runs I had, but the first comic run of Dazzler was less about superheroics and more just about her trying to survive on like a tiny little salary in a big city and trying to still do what she loved to do, which was, in her case, sing. And like nowadays, I'm like, wow, I'm poor and try to do what I want to do too. I really identify with Dazzler, except I don't have any cool superpowers, sadly.
That's a tough question. I think for me, and I never, like, I used to read the comic books, but this is more from a cartoon that's based on the comic books, but there's an old Tintin cartoon And I always identified that with that as a kid, just because the adventures were so crazy. But like, almost achievable in ways, not meeting Yeti, but other stuff. But yeah, I think the adventure in that really spoke to me.
Tintin on the Moon, one of the best books ever. I read that 20 times. For me, Peter Parker, beyond a shadow of a doubt, I got the crap kicked out of me in school from grade one through a lot of it. Every day you get off the school bus, on the school bus, you know, the classic bullying case, and I totally identified with him. When I was about 13, my dad sent me to the private school Notre Dame in Wilcox, Saskatchewan. I don't know if you guys know that school. Mostly a hockey school. Wendell Clark, you know, NHL player, was in my dorm and all that stuff. Crap kicked out of me every day again. They actually would pull you out of your dormitory and line all the weaklings up and then walk down and give you shots, stuff like that. I used to break into a classroom, do my homework because I had nothing else to do, and hide in the classroom to like lights out and then go back. And I totally identified with Peter Parker. And I go watch the movies with a buddy of mine. He's like, he's such a sad sack. Come on, let me go to Spider-Man movies. No way, I got Peter Parker. You know, and it's a good thing I didn't have those powers. Because the whole great power responsibility thing, there'd have been no responsibility, I guarantee you that. It would have been all revenge fantasy. So, yeah, that's it in a nutshell.
I would go with a little-known DC character, the Dog Welder. Power that is about the coolest power you could possibly have, but completely useless. And that's how I feel most of the time, that I got all this stuff built up, but it doesn't fit together. It's like having Legos without the little blocks on them to fit them together. But, yeah, Dog Welder. He only occurs in Hitman. If you can find those back issues and those pins I mentioned, I highly recommend getting any issue with Dog Welder.
Is he Googleable?
He's Googleable, yeah.
I'll be Googling.
And that's his power. He welds dogs to things, so...
That's an awesome superpower.
Two other dogs or two like inanimate objects? Anything.
He can weld a dog to anything.
I love that. I need more specific information on Dog Welder. I grew up in a small town, so extremely small town. So Superman is actually Superman Clark Kent, I'm from a small town upbringing, and I can't let anyone know just how awesome I am. That's who I identify with, and deeply flawed characters as well. Booster Gold, because he's deeply flawed, and his ego gets in his way. So clearly,
I wanted to ask what the hell it was with Booster Gold, because the guy speaks about Booster Gold twice a week.
I get
nobody
asked,
talks about Booster Gold except this one guy here.
I get asked that frequently. deeply flawed characters. I love deeply flawed characters. All right. Well, thanks for coming out to the Edmonton Comic and Entertainment Expo. That was very close. we have been doing this show at the Calgary Expo as well. If you're down for that show, come out and see us again. WeTalkPodcast.com is us. And I'm going to let the folks say, because the con has closed and you can't get their books at their tables, how can they track you down? Hope?
You can follow me on Twitter at Hope L. Nicholson, and I'll probably tweet about really stupid things like what I'm eating for breakfast, but every so often on there I'll let you know when my books are coming out too.
Nothing is vitally important as Booster Gold on her Twitter. Vic?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter as well. It's just at Vic Malhotra. I think it's simple. Books can be found in comic stores. My newest book just came out on Wednesday. Pick it up. It's number one from Image Comics. And we'd love the support.
I've got a credit card bill to clear before I do issue 3 in December, so I brought comics with me right here. There's no better way to get one than to come talk to me. But my last name's Overwater. I have a page, The Comic is Futility, on overwater.ca. If you Google Futility Comic, it does come up. I'm on Twitter at RJOverwater as well. So.
Fantastic. Thanks for coming out to the expo.
to know that, like, the dad of the Calvin and Hobbes kids, he did his PhD dissertation on punk aesthetic.
Yeah.
So he had a panel.
Is that the guy that had, was doing the panel?
I went to his panel
yesterday.
His kids.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. For a series that's on Amazon.